Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tar Pit for week two, leg three, and I would say the end of Amazing Race 33.1 as we bid adieu to life before the coronavirus pandemic, both in the Amazing Race and reality TV as a whole, it seems. My name is Mike Bloom, bringing back the Tar Pit, our sort of odds and ends, funs and games wrap up of this past week in the Amazing Race, here with another panel to talk about a trip to Scotland that saw not just one team leave, but many teams leave for 19 months, and some came back. So we have a lot to talk about between the legs, between the shutdown, between the restart, a lot happening. Of course, I would not be able to do this without one of the co-hosts of the Amazing Race podcast proper, Jessica Lees. Jess, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mike. I'm glad we didn't take 18 months in between tar pits. I like this every week. Business. This is great.
It feels nice, right? Like, if the race can't be normal, we should be, even though normal is, of course, in quotations, given the way that I opened this past week's podcast.
Yeah, well, I was gonna start talking about the tar pit being all nice and gooey, but I'm like, I don't want to go full bloom this week. We're just not gonna even go.
We hit our quota right now. We are overflowing. The barrel at this point cannot even put a lid on it.
Yeah, it runneth over.
But once again, Rob is not able to join us, but we have a really fantastic guest to bring on because he really is, I would say, one of the staples of a reality TV commentary just out there in the universe. He's most well known for his opinions on Big Brother, on Survivor. So when I see Taryn Armstrong see that he's going to hop on a stream and talk about Amazing Race, color me a little bit shocked, but we felt the perfect week to bring him on considering that as a self-proclaimed robot, he knows a bit or two about reboots. So happy to welcome Taryn to the Tar Pit. How's it going, Taryn?
You know, I'm doing all right, Mike. When you first asked me to be here, I thought you were challenging me to a race. Yeah, I feel like you're apt to do that. I was very excited about that. So when I showed up and we were talking about the Amazing Race, I was kind of disappointed, but we'll make it through.
We'll make it. Get in line, all right? This is just a various queue of people, apparently, that I've already started to run a presumptive race that doesn't even exist yet.
Yep. I got to be honest, Taryn, having you on the podcast to talk about Amazing Race, after only having heard you talk about Big Brother mostly, it's kind of like seeing your teacher at the supermarket. Like, this is totally out of context. I'm really, really excited to hear what you have to say. It's like, oh my God, he's holding a cantaloupe. He's just like a normal human being.
Well, I feel like you're probably the person that works at the supermarket then, because I feel like you're like an expert at the cantaloupe and I'm coming in with these like very uninformed opinions on the Amazing Race. I have seen every season, most of them, at least half of them twice. But I, you know, I listen to you guys and you're like, you know, quoting off teams from, you know, I remember like the hippies, right? Like I remember them. They're probably the only team I remember from the first, like, other than Flo and that one, like from the first like 15 seasons.
That'd be a fun thing. Taryn takes Sporkle quizzes to figure out between the hippies and Flo and that one. What are the teams he knows?
Oh yeah, and then, you know, the Colin.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Colin and Christy.
Yep, remembered them.
That's one.
Yeah, yep. Literally one person from
Robbie team. Ember.
No, there's two.
There you go. Oh. See, it's a little bit tougher, right? You have to remember, I've experienced this as well as someone who has gained just like a continuing encyclopedic, useless knowledge of these reality TV contestants. Amazing Race is hard. And just, I think you can agree with this, right? Because you have to remember twice as many names.
True. Yeah.
It's specifically their relations to each other.
It's 22 people every season. And you do kind of end up lumping them together as like they run as a single entity, but it's also, you know, that adds up. It's 22 people per season times 33 seasons. Plus there's a couple where they had an extra team or two. It's a lot. It's amazing that you and I remember any of it, Mike, to be honest. And some of them kind of blur together in the middle.
Yeah. So that being said, Taryn, despite maybe some nominal aphasia, as you said, you've watched so much Amazing Race, which, again, I mentioned this on the podcast, and it might surprise people a little bit, because I would say this is not necessarily the most like game heavy show out there, which seems to be more of your bread and butter and yogurt. But tell me, you know, what has kept you along with the race for so many years, sometimes even twice over when it comes to certain seasons?
You know, it was primarily that it was just one of the big three shows back in the day, right? It was, I felt like I was supposed to watch it because I liked Big Brother and Survivor. And I think what drew me to it is, you know, a lot of what Maggie said in the previous carpet here. I was always drawn to the relationships between the contestants. Especially in the early days, it was a huge thing. And, you know, there was definitely an element of like, hate watching the people that were mean to each other being like, no, you're so mean, and not wanting them to win. And really rooting for the people that were nice and supportive to each other. That was a big part of it. And then I kind of fell off of it for a little while, and I went back and I rewatched like the everything. And the reason I got through the rewatch is because of the strength of season one for me. Mm. Season one is so vastly different to almost the entirety of the rest of the Amazing Race. And I really loved it. I mean, it just like drew me in. You know, it's very dated in a lot of ways, but it really takes the time to like make you feel like you're traveling with them, and you get the sense that this is new and it's interesting and it's exciting. And, you know, the Amazing Race nowadays, I look at it more as kind of like it's popcorn TV. It's on, you know, the pacing is so fast. Everything is just happening. And there's very little sort of emotional involvement for me anymore. But that first season of the Amazing Race was emotional, and it was fun. And I think that concept stays with me, even though that feeling is gone.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we should also mention, Jess, because there was no Amazing Race on last fall, we did miss out on the big 20th anniversary of season one.
Wow. That I feel super old now, because I can't believe any of these shows have been on for 20 years, to be honest.
Yeah, it's pretty wild to think about. And I would really encourage you, I don't know if you've checked this out, Taryn, but Andy Denhart, I think, did like an oral history or some sort of like voluminous article about the 20th anniversary of season one. And I mean, I totally agree with you. Season one was something that really did hook me from the start, just because of how different it was in so many ways, separate from a Big Brother and a Survivor, in that it was about competition, but like cooperation at the same time. And so, well, maybe there are still elements that exist there. I encourage people to check it out, especially since I'll again put out Amazing Race seasons 1 through 25, currently available on Disney Plus in Canada. So if you want to, if this is just a taste of your first Amazing Race, and you're like, oh, I want to see, you know, it take place in, once again, a very weird time for the world, be sure to check out season one.
Yeah, like how much of this are, I have not gone back and watched any Amazing Race yet. And the first few episodes of this season was already weird enough. I don't know how I'm going to feel if I eventually go back and do a full season rewatch. This is going to be, it's going to be hard in a lot of ways, I think.
So that being said, let's focus on season 33 now, jumping forward those decades. So Taryn, you know, as you're enjoying the popcorn TV of this season, what's the taste of the popcorn to you? Obviously, we are finishing up kind of what is going to be probably specifically very different in a tonal setting from what's to come in the next few weeks. But this is probably the closest we'll get this season to, quote unquote, proper Amazing Race. What have you thought about the season up to this point?
I mean, I've thought it was fine. You know, I think that the thing about the Amazing Race is that it's always because the pace is so fast and it's so trying to be engaging at all times. It is. It's engaging and it's fun to watch, you know. It never tends to like be elevated beyond just casually fun to watch, but this has been a casually fun to watch season so far. The teams all had these weird, interesting backgrounds and stories. It was like, what tragedy has befallen this person? And that was fun. One of the reasons why I barely remember teams is because I don't remember their names. I just call them the whatever, the Train Bros or the Twins or whatever, right? And so I like when they're like, they have like these distinguishable stories. It helps me, call them a thing. And it was fine. You know, I was enjoying it. I was weirdly, I know this might not be something that, that everybody thought, but I was looking forward to the cancellation because it was something different and interesting. And I was curious about the emotion of it, the feeling of it. Like, how would people respond to it? How would people react to it? And what kind of, how would they portray it? So that was something that I was very curious about coming in.
Yeah. I mean, you also covered Big Brother Canada 8, which actually probably in a similar time frame. I can't remember how many weeks before or after in 2020 it happened, but also shut down production due to COVID-19. Did not come back. And I do feel like we got like a whole episode dedicated to that, right? And having everyone react to leaving the house and just the game suddenly stopping short. How do you compare that to what you ultimately saw at the end of last week's episode?
Incredibly different. I mean, Big Brother Canada, they made a meal of it. And, you know, I think there are probably, again, different takes on this. Maybe some people don't care to have to experience this or relive this again. Some people probably wouldn't care to make a meal of something this serious. For me, I've always processed things. I've always learned to process things through the expression of them in art. And so, I would have loved to have spent a little more time here. What was going on in the heads of the contestants prior to this? Were they aware that this was happening, that this could happen? Were they scared that it might happen? Were they disappointed? How disappointed were they? Are they sad? Do they feel like they're going to be able to come back? What went on in the heads of the producers? Like, I would have loved to have gotten like a behind the scenes of like, I don't know if we can continue doing this. What kind of discussion was that? This is something that I would have loved to see, but The Amazing Race, again, in modern times, not really interested in diving deep into this sort of thing. They care about the formula of the show, the challenges, the travel, the places, and they don't like to deviate. They don't really like to make an emotional meal out of much of anything. And that is disappointing to me, but it is the show and it's consistent with the show. And so, I can accept it.
Well, to be fair, Taryn, how much of that is like the contrast between Big Brother Canada and this, how much of that is just the time frame? Because Big Brother Canada unfolded in real time. Like we watched people basically live reacting to what was about to happen. And this one, we had almost 2 years for the editors to decide how much they wanted to tell that story and also to see how circumstances played out. So I think they may have made the conscious choice not to see what was going on in everybody's heads just because how we would have reacted to that in real time is very different to how we're reacting to it now, with a combination of, fatigue being a really important thing. Like, I don't know if I want to watch people on TV reacting to life because I'm living life right now.
It's an interesting point. What I do sort of wonder is if there could have been almost like a happy medium where I'm thinking about RuPaul's Drag Race UK season 2, kind of talking out of my butt here. So maybe one of the Drag Race podcasters out there who's listening can correct me. I believe they did sort of like, it's not to say COVID-19 special because that implies some sort of star-studded variety show. But they essentially did an episode where they made the announcement that the season would be sort of like in suspension. And then they sort of did a special where they showed what everyone had kind of been up to during the hiatus before things came back. And look, when we came back, we talked about this at the end of the recap podcast. There are teams that are missing. There might be some familiar faces that come back as well that will sort of pepper in discussion about throughout this, because now officially, since we've discussed that, there has been a promo that has aired that just outright says what the dealio is. So again, if you really don't want to be spoiled about Wednesday, actively avoid any social media around The Amazing Race, because now they're outright just giving away the ending in that regard. But I do wonder if they had the ability to, Jeff, what do you think about this idea of doing sort of a special where, because I think there, it was also said, it's obviously not going to be shown, but I think there was a point where like Phil talked with each of the teams that came back about what their lives had been like, you know, in the interim. Is that something that you think would be fine? Or are you good to sort of like what the show is doing, just say, we're back, let's just move on with the race, and maybe we'll find out as they continue to race?
Well, I think Phil said they have that kind of stuff in the can. So I don't mind seeing a little bit of it, because I'm curious about, I'm especially curious, I want to know what happened to the other four teams. I think they must have, they have to tell us, right? But I don't need a ton of it. I don't need a whole like Oprah interview where we sit down on the couch and go through everybody's, you know, feelings about it. But there's, you know, we can sprinkle in a little bit of it. Like I said in the recap, I want to see like the end of Animal House. That's all I need to have. I just need like a still image and a little Chiron saying, here's what we've been up to.
Yeah. Taryn, I know before we came on, actually, you had said that you had actually felt like there actually wasn't a cliffhanger, in your opinion, that they were building to. Because I know you're also like a connoisseur of editing, given, you know, what you do outside of podcasting. So I can imagine that, much like Maggie talked about last week, the Amazing Race edit is of interest to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's the idea of like, oh, well, we don't want to spoil the cliffhanger. But I genuinely don't know that they intended it to be a cliffhanger, because they are just showing things. You know what I mean? Even in that, even in the episode that we're talking about, they show enough for you to know exactly who came back and who didn't, because they're all in the shot. All you need to do is pause the screen. Or if you're quick and eagle-eyed, you can spot it without having to pause the scene. And then they release a preview with, I'm sure, all of those people again. And so it's like, are they even trying to make this a cliffhanger? Because there was no sort of dramatic intent, it felt, again, angled toward who's coming back. Did everyone come back? Where is everyone? It was just kind of like, you know, 19 months later, here we are, ready, set, go. And, you know, it didn't seem like it was supposed to be a mystery. So, you know, I kind of expect that when we come back, it's not going to be like, and here they are, these are the teams. It's going to be like, and so these teams had to come back and these teams are gone. Let's get going. And so like, I don't even know that there's a point to remaining unspoiled, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and we'll certainly get into it, because again, like to your point, whether they wanted to or not, CBS has just outright put the information out there. And I mean, I do think also based on what I saw, I think, Jess, unfortunately, we are going to be missing a bit of that Animal House epilogue, where it really does just seem like, yeah, they're not coming back. Hey, you can do your digging online if you want to, but otherwise, you're good. Here's some other teams. Let's keep going through Switzerland or wherever we are.
They're basically going to do the LMGTFY. And
now I'm trying to spell things out.
If you go to the LMGTFY.
Oh, yeah, let me Google that for you.
Yeah. Yeah, let me Google that for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, you want to know this information, you could have searched it up yourself. Although, Mike, I don't think you could have searched it up yourself, because it took you, the person who probably knows the most about these contestants outside of anybody that directly works for the show or, you know, lives on Reality Fan Forum. You're the person that had to dig this stuff up, and it wasn't easy. You can't just Google their names and have it explained to you.
Yeah, and I'm not even affiliated with soap operas, and I'm somehow key to this information. But yeah, it does take a lot of sleuthing to find out what happened. And I will be intrigued once, I would assume, some sort of embargo passes once the episode actually airs, though, again, that information is out there. Will the teams come out on social media and be like, hey, here's what happened? Or is it more so just going to be like, yeah, we're not going to be on The Amazing Race. Let's keep going. On that note, actually, let's start getting into our feedback, because, of course, we have some great listeners of the podcast. They wrote in with their own feedback. Of course, you can do that at robhasawebsite.com/TAR questions, not TARAN questions. That goes to a very different person. But let's start with something. And I will mention here, we are going to be discussing the teams that did not come back briefly. So if you do not want to know that, I would very heavily suggest you skip ahead, let's say about 2 minutes or so. But I kind of want to get this talk off the bat so that we can go through the rest of the podcast focusing on the episode proper. So again, if you do not want to know the teams that do come back, I would say skip ahead, come back to the recap proper or to the Tar Pits proper, and we'll move on from there. But we got a question from Jordan that I think has certainly been asked a lot in lieu of this very unprecedented situation. And again, it relates a bit to Taryn, some speculation that happened with Big Brother Canada 9 this past year. Jordan says, do you think we'll see Connie and Sam, Anthony and Spencer, or Taylor and Isaiah, or Caro and Ray, I guess we could do a different type of situation, on a future season? Do you think CBS will give them another chance because their race ended through no fault of their own, maybe on the next season or with a season with returnees? Jess, what do you think? What do you think the chances are of should they do it and will they do it?
I think it would be weird. I always think it's weird, and I feel this way about Survivor as well. And I think they've done something similar in Big Brother to just like take somebody from another season and plunk them down in a brand new season. I don't like that ever. Didn't like it on Survivor. I guess Big Brother did like the coaches thing or the one where they brought back like the four randos. And I feel like it unfairly advantages people that have done it before. And I really, if they're going to bring these people back, I want to see it in a future season where they're all returnees. And I feel like those people, like having run three legs is probably going to disadvantage them a bit, but I would love to see them come back in the mix of like an Unfinished Business 2 situation where we just say, like, here's people that got U-turned at a bad spot, or here's people that, you know, they couldn't settle this rivalry between them and another team. I don't know. I'm making stuff up. I'm not coming up with specific examples today. But yeah, bring them back and say, like, bring back two of them and say, we didn't get to finish the race because of the world, and now we're back. But I don't know. I'm going to have to know a lot more about how the Amazing Race looks in these current times before I can say whether or not I want that sort of thing for them.
Yeah, Taryn, what's your take? Because again, I know leading up to Big Brother Canada 9, a lot of people were like, why can season 8 contestants get a chance? I know that's the speculation always going into BB Can 10 as well. What is your sort of stance, I guess, towards that general idea and how it applies maybe to this season of The Amazing Race?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing for Big Brother because, you know, The Amazing Race, yeah, you have a couple of legs of experience, but you're also, there's not like any severe disadvantage necessarily. Whereas like in Big Brother, if some people went back, their games have been exposed. Like people know how they play. They also have some experience though. It could go either way. And you know, either way, you're never going to be able to give them the setup that they had in their season. Whereas, you know, The Amazing Race pretty much resets itself every leg or two. And, you know, maybe you have some momentum, maybe you're in a certain shape or whatever, but not to the degree that Big Brother is its own unique experience each season. So it's different in that way. But in terms of like bringing them back, I don't think that they're really making much of a meal of this. Like, is there going to be a large amount of like, oh, no, this is so tragic, we really wish that we could see these people back because it's so sad that they had to leave? Or are they gone and we're never going to see them again and we're going to completely forget that they exist? And the biggest upside to bringing them back is, a 30-second intro where they go, we were on The Amazing Race, but unfortunately and tragically, we had to go and now we're back, which is totally possible. But I think it's a lot more just like, if it's convenient and we really think that they'd be good, then sure, we'll bring them back. But I don't think it doesn't seem like the kind of thing where they'll be like, we really need to do this because people really care. Cause I don't think they're leaning into that.
Yeah.
People have the memory of a goldfish on this show. you do raise an interesting point, Taryn. I think they're going to make a bigger meal out of the fact that the two eliminated teams get to come back. Mm. I think that's going to be the bigger headline here. And if they do ever bring back a team that didn't get to finish, they're going to spend a few seconds on it and it's going to be part of a bigger story. Like everybody gets their own story. It's not going to be this all-consuming piece of it.
It reminds me a lot, Jess, of the most recent season of Big Brother, about Amazing Race Canada, right? Where it was, the theme was second chances, and it was a bunch of quote-unquote civilian teams, but they brought back one returning team that did not win as sort of their own redemption story.
Yeah, they really didn't win.
Yeah, I could very much see that sort of theming if they wanted to go along with that. That has sort of been also the casting theming, I could say, if they do end up going with a second chance, is not literally from a game perspective, but like a second chance in life almost. I could see them bringing back, let's be candid here, with no offense to the other teams, I think Anthony and Spencer have to be the chalk pick that they would bring back of these four, right? If they only had one pick.
Yeah, and I think also I think their story would their story is still more interesting than the story of, well, we were on the Amazing Race, but then it got canceled and we couldn't come back. So it'd still be like, and these are the guys that, you know, were on a train and everything.
Although that seems like the easiest type of team to cast. So if we want to talk about, I don't think we're ever going to see Caro and Ray. We can just X them out.
I mean, but, yeah, they almost X themselves out in a manner of speaking.
Yeah, they are. They have. Yeah, it's a self-Xing. But I think we have a better chance. Actually, no, Connie and Sam are also an easy type of team to cast. Like that's like every single person that watches the show is going to cast themselves with their partner. So, yeah, I think actually you're probably right, Taryn. If that's the team we're going to see, like if we're going to see one of these teams, that's probably the one we're going to see.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
We got a question from the other sort of side of this. As Jess mentioned, we are also bringing back two teams in the form of Michael and Mo and Arun and Natalia. First off, Taryn, any thoughts about this just from like a game design perspective? Makes sense to you to just bring back the teams and essentially do a soft restart of the race proper?
Well, my initial thought was no, they wouldn't do this because and definitely correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels weird to me, the idea that there's a team that could theoretically win that has completely not even done an entire leg or two of the whole race. That just feels weird to me in a way that it doesn't feel as weird even on Big Brother or Survivor. However, considering the fact that they lost four teams, I'm like, do what you need to do. Like, you need to salvage this in any way that you can.
Jess, we got a question on that note from Guatemala asks, when not all teams could return, should producers have considered alumni to replace them in addition to returning teams? Or what would the race be like if only half of a team returned, i.e. Dusty came back with a different partner because Ryan couldn't? And I sort of posited this when we talked about how with Anthony and Spencer, it seems like I think Anthony was the one who had gotten injured. I mean, do you think production would have entertained the option of Spencer coming back with, as Rob calls him, the third one? If it's like Connie and Sam, and if for some reason Sam decides to race, he like races with his brother instead of Connie for the reboot.
Here's what I think I would have rather seen in that circumstance. I would have rather seen, like, obviously Connie can't go. Sam could go. And we know Anthony couldn't go. Could Sam and Spencer run as a team? Mm. I would rather see a Franken team in that instance than try to go to the well of, you know, previous people that have run the Amazing Race on seasons past. Because I think, you know, I'm on record as how I feel about that idea.
Yeah, it's very much out of like the challenge, right? When it's like, oh, mm-hmm. this person's rival went home, so we brought in another rival, and this person mm-hmm. is your rival. Like, I like that idea of, what was it, the partner swap they did a few seasons ago? This is just a season-long version of that.
Exactly. Like, put your keys in the bowl, and whoever you get, that's your partner.
Yeah, it's like, grab a clue, and whatever name is on the clue is who you end up picking.
Yeah, I mean, we've done it before. We could do it again.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think, Taryn? You think mixing up the teams would be an interesting way to sort of get those people back without necessarily needing to reset the board too much?
Yeah, I mean, if that was an option, you know, if it really was that, you know, there was one person from each team that was willing to come back or capable of coming back, then I don't see the I think that's a much better option to pair them off. Because again, there's just something weird about somebody joining late or even just missing a leg. That's like if they win, like you didn't do the whole trip. Like, that's weird.
Yeah, you missed a leg of the trip, quite literally. You just sort of like skipped out for that portion. I would very much recommend that you do not watch the most recent season of The Amazing Race Australia, because apparently they
just about to mention
do that up the wazoo, not only with teams coming back, but also teams just, they call them intruders, I think, much like in a Big Brother style, just showing up in the middle of the race.
Like, it's just the race over.
Even a relay race, like they're all there at the start. Nobody like just like comes in. Like, it's not like, oh, it's we're running a marathon and oh, somebody joined in on mile 24. What? No, that's not the point.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, I think the people that won Amazing Race Australia had been there the whole time. They didn't like Underwood it up, but they did have a circumstance where like a team got eliminated or team quit. And then they said, okay, the team that got eliminated in the previous leg, you guys aren't quitters. You want to be here. Okay, you can come back.
Yeah, so I think they missed out on one leg, but it's still an odd thing to see that little gray block in their, leg history page. Let's move on from talking about the next time on and talking about the leg proper, because Jess, we got to break out this delightful song again. I want to do a little bit more Amazing Race 101. So here we go.
Amazing Race 101.
So we got a few questions from Amazing Race fans about like different tactics that were taken in this leg specifically. Let's talk about what befell poor Arun and Natalia. First off, Taryn, give me your thoughts on Arun and Natalia. Seems like they were, from my own census of the internet, like fairly popular team. Did you enjoy them through their few legs of the race?
I did. I felt like they were one of the more standout teams in terms of just their dynamic and the way that they struggled often. And I enjoyed them. The scene in the convenience store where, you know, the dad is disappointed that he screwed up and she's like, no, was great. Again, I love the supportive teams. I'm very on, you know, very with Maggie on this. Like, that's what I often would watch for is like, okay, who's nice to each other? I'm going to root for them. Who's mean to each other? I'm going to be like, I hope they lose. So I really enjoyed that. I thought it was fun, and they do struggle in the challenges, like the darts. It was they had to struggle through, and you know, the decision to switch tasks from the barrels was terrible. I mean, it was very bad. And you know, they definitely like earned their loss here, but I'm curious to see how they're going to do, you know, potentially, in the future.
So on that note, we did get a question about switching detours. I feel like we actually didn't talk that much about the idea of switching detours just during our recap show for Amazing Race newbies. So Raymond asks, how common is it for teams to switch detours like Arun and Natalia? Furthermore, has a team ever been unable to do either side of the detour?
I think we can go back for the second half of that question. We can go back to Amazing Race 15. And there was a team of women who were professional poker players. And they were in, I think, the Netherlands. And it was pouring rain. The two tasks, one of them was like the strongman game where you have a hammer and you have to hit a
100-pound boulder on your shoulder.
Basically, yeah. So you had to hit the this target with a hammer really hard to make the bell ring. And the other half was like a frisbee golf course, I think. And it was freezing cold and raining, and they kept switching back and forth trying to find one that they could physically do. And at a certain point, they just like threw in the towel because there was no way they were going to physically be able to complete either end of the detour. So that is a thing that happens. I'm thinking also, I think a memorable task switch would have been season 13. We had the team Dandrew had a task where they had to either serve soup or march in formation. Was that Mike?
Yeah. I specifically remember the marching, because Dandrew marching is like when you try to teach a robot like human behavior, the marching was just hilariously abysmal.
Yeah. I can't remember. Was it serving soup? I can't remember what the other half of the detour was.
Maybe it was. Yeah.
They switched back and forth. Yeah. They were at a Russian military base. They switched back and forth a few times until they finally got the marching. And not my proudest moment, but that year at Tarkon, I'd probably had a few too many, and I went right up to them and showed them how easy it was to march in formation. And I feel really bad about that.
Yeah, so it was a detour. It was boots or borscht was the detour. Yes. So yes, very self-explanatory. So yeah, there is a history behind it. Now, that being said, in terms of quitting the detour, so the penalty is currently, I believe, 6 hours. So if you quit the detour when you check in, we have yet to experience a penalty on this season of The Amazing Race, but Phil will basically say, you are the sixth team to arrive. However, you were unable to complete the detour. Therefore, you know, sit right over there. You have to wait 6 hours before you can check in. Used to be a lot worse. Going back to Terran's beloved season one, there was a very big fan favorite team. So it got eliminated for quitting the detour. They had a 24-hour penalty. So they really did not want people quitting tasks in that first season.
I mean, at that point, that almost came into play, but that was in the days when they didn't mind having many, many hours between teams.
I liked that. I don't need them to pretend to me that like that everyone is really close all the time. Sorry to go off on this again, but
no, please.
I missed the running. I missed the actual foot races. It happened all the time in the early season. I don't know how they lost those, but bring them back. They're fun.
Yeah. I wonder, Jess, was there a paradigm shift in the race? Is it the tasks? Is it the places they're going to that? I feel like, well, we had a couple of like, I'm thinking specifically the first leg of season 30 between the goat girls and the ring girls, was like the big foot race to the mat. But I do feel like we are missing that from some of the earlier days where maybe it was a bit more common.
Yeah, I think they have moved away from anything involving the travel because, you know, they're making a meal out of the fact that they have their own plane for the next part of the race. But it has not been a situation where you have to go up to a ticket counter and book your own tickets in many seasons. They have been on charter flights since at least like season 24. Maybe before that. And I think part of the less focus on the getting around aspect is because they're trying to obscure the fact that they're getting around is a lot more regimented now. They have tightened up the production schedule significantly. So you don't have like all this room to breathe where you're going to catch up. If you're going to catch up, you're going to catch up on the tasks. And the focus is on the tasks you're doing. So this is why I don't think that the upcoming episodes are going to feel like that much of a paradigm shift, because we've been laser focused on the tasks for many seasons now.
And for what it's worth, Taryn, when I talked with the showrunners, they did say that due to the self-driving, and it seems like they're being more outdoors just due to the spread of it all, I specifically was told that it's going to harken back to earlier seasons. So maybe that means that we're going to get some foot races going on.
Maybe I'm going to enjoy the season a lot more than most of the recent ones.
So you're someone who, you know, orients a lot of their analysis behind things like decision making. And this is a little bit of an odder situation. But in your opinion, like, is there a place and a time to think about switching detours? Or for you, is it always basically you should very rarely do it?
I mean, I think you should very rarely do it. I think that you also need to account for how long does it take to, like, you know, change into the clothes for this thing or get into the harness or whatever. I think you have to account for how far away is the other detour, or whatever. Like, is it going to take me 20 minutes, to get over there? Is there going to be traffic? Like, am I going to get lost on my way to the other one? Or is it like, you know, a few steps away? I think you have to account for how many people are at this one right now. And do I have to wait while the other people do it? In order to do it, you know, am I here first and can I try it a bunch of times quickly before somebody gets here? All kinds of stuff like that. I also feel like typically I think get a feel for it. The best case scenario is that you quit very early because you're like, you know what? This really doesn't feel right. And you get over to the other one and you haven't lost too much time, as long as it's close by enough. If you're like, this really doesn't feel right, but we're going to keep trying because we're not quitters. And then you try for like a half hour, and then you're like, okay, we've finally exhausted every possible outcome and it's definitely not going to work. And then you switch, you've wasted a half an hour, right? So I think you have to consider all of those things, but I think in general, you know, if you feel like, okay, this is doable, it just might take a little bit of time, just do it. I have no idea why they thought the barrel thing was impossible. Because it did not seem impossible by any standard of measuring. So I can't abide by that.
Yeah, just can we standardize a sweet spot to Taryn's point? Is there like a specific amount of time usually that you could try on a task before you decide, okay, maybe we should switch?
I mean, I've heard 20 to 30 minutes without improving is the point at which you decide to switch. Because I think the key there is, you need to know when you are just treading water and when you're actually making progress. Because if you have got a little bit better at something every time, then yeah, stick with it. You're going to eventually get it.
There are also tasks where, especially physical ones, where like your first few attempts are always going to be your best because afterwards you're physically going to be degrading and you're going to get worse and worse at the thing that you're trying to do. So those are also ones where it's like, if you've done like your best efforts in the first couple of rounds and like maybe your skill will get better, but your energy level or whatever is going to go down and it's just going to get more and more difficult. That's another one to probably quickly bail out of and do something else.
Yeah, I'm thinking of that one that was, I'm not even sure which season this was, when they were in Malta and they had to run up that greased pole.
Oh yeah, 25. That was this or that. That was the...
Yeah, this or that, right.
This or that detour.
And that was like, we can only think of one task we think these people will be able to complete. So we're just going to throw in something that nobody's ever going to be able to do. And we'll see if people get stuck at it. And that one really felt like if you did it once or twice and you got it by blind luck, then great. But if you didn't get it after that, you got to bail.
Right. So we talked about the driving. Let's get more into the self-driving aspect. Natalie asks, are you surprised it's not a rule that both team members have to have a driver's license? I feel like Caro might be the first person I remember who outright said she couldn't drive. So just, I guess, outside of the family edition, have we had many people say on The Amazing Race, I don't have a driver's license?
I don't think so. It's something they actually, I don't know if they do it anymore, but one of the reasons I've never applied is because I don't drive, and they say it right on the application that you must have a driver's license. I think that exceptions would be made if you like, if
we're
you physically
from Love
couldn't.
Island.
Well, yeah, or if you're from Love Island. But I think, like, I'm thinking of Amazing Race Canada, for instance, that had a racer a racer who was blind. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. they're not going to make him drive anything, although they did let him operate heavy machinery.
Like, so, the one thing you're not supposed to do.
I know. He was so stoked about it, too. He's like, when am I ever going to get to do this again in my life?
I mean, it's a great question, but like, if the answer is it's because production's irresponsible to give you that ability.
As long as you don't get anyone killed, like, have at it, guy. I think if there was like a specific physical reason why you could not drive and they were reasonably sure you could do like a significant portion of the other tasks they had set for you, I think they'd still cast you because it's an inspiring story. But I believe that you pretty much always have to both at least have a driver's license. And sometimes, you know, driver's license can mean any number of things. It can mean you got behind the wheel of a car a few times and were able to pass a test, or it could mean you drive every day.
Karen, as someone who, you know, really buys into the nice teams being nice and the not so nice teams being not so nice, how much does the self-driving play into this? Because I feel like this is always just sitting in a car with a time bomb, essentially, for your relationship, just waiting to explode at a certain point.
So here's the thing. I'm actually on board with the notion of, like, don't nag the driver, right? Like, don't be like, oh, no, or like, oh, crap. Like, that is not helpful to the driver, who needs to focus and does not need somebody constantly distracting them from the thing that they're trying to do. However, in the situation of Caro and I don't know the guy's name, the Love Island team, you know, he she apologized and he was still being a jerk. Even though I was initially like, I agree with the notion of like, please stop, I need to focus on the driving. Once somebody apologizes, come on, it's time to get over it.
I just realized, you think maybe one of the reasons Ray broke up with Caro is because she does have Car in her name and it's just too bad of a memory for what they experienced on the race?
I think there were a lot of reasons, Mike, but I'm sure it could be part of it.
99 problems.
It's super, you know, insightful on, you know, because it is, it's a stressful situation, you know, especially when there's a time crunch and one of you is driving and trying to focus on something, and it definitely tests the sort of like, because I think there are teams now that understand, like, if I'm mean on the race, then people will know that I'm a mean person. So I need to be as nice as possible. I'm very image conscious. But like driving situations, I feel like are some of the most, like breaking point situations where they might lose it. Or I guess trying to sing, a thing, right?
Yeah, those are the two just most high stress points in the race, apparently. It's like, put me in a costume and put me in a car, and I'm liable to just break completely. Final feedback question. Jess, this is a question for you from Larry from the Philippines. I would just like to ask if hiring taxis is still allowed that you can follow during legs of the race that are self-driving. Was there a rule imposed that this is not allowed anymore? And he talks about how, yeah, back during like the mid-20s, there was a good habit where if you had a leg with self-driving, you could hire a taxi driver to essentially take you there, and then you'd be able to follow them. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Jess, have they made that, they put a penalty against that in recent seasons, right, I believe?
Yeah, it's been at least since the mid-20s, but I think it was well before that, Mike. I don't remember. I think the last time I saw somebody doing that had to be like, there were a lot of legs. There were a lot of races where there wasn't any self-driving. And I'm trying to think. I feel like Unfinished Business, where you had Kent and Vixen driving all over everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And people wondered why they didn't hire a taxi. And I feel like that came up, that they weren't allowed to do it anymore. But you might remember something that I'm forgetting. I'm pretty sure that it's been a really long time since you've been allowed to do that.
Yeah, so I'm remembering something with like maybe the Stunt Brothers from Amazing Race 14. They did a butt ton of penalties, but maybe one of them was like you weren't supposed to hire a taxi to use them as a guide, essentially, because essentially that's just like hacking it, right, and using them as GPS.
I think when they first, there was a lot of stuff that you were allowed to do that you're not allowed to do anymore, because if everybody does it, it breaks the race. If one person does it, it's cool, and then if everybody does it, it's just like, this is a thing now. One of those things is also like, get a local to run the race with you all day and have this like third person on your team. That used to be a really funny thing that people did. And it's like, oh, wow, what a helpful person this was. That's great. But now if you do that, you get in trouble for that as well.
What if you double hired? What if you paid double to get the taxi driver to sabotage them and lead them in the wrong direction?
I think, well, Boston Rob used to do that. He used to like pay bus drivers to sabotage the other teams.
Yeah.
I think that's frowned upon. I don't know if you get an actual penalty for it, but I smile. Would imagine that they put the fear of God into these people.
It's, as Natalia talks about, it'd be bad karma, I think I would say, to be like, how dare you do this? But then boss, you know, boss are like, I don't care. Stop the bus here. So yeah, it's interesting in that there's sort of things that teams have done in the past that I think the Amazing Race is kind of like silently phased out over the seasons. As said, like, you maybe shouldn't be doing that anymore. Let's not encourage this as a common practice, because if you do, then it's like everyone does it, and then you've essentially like beaten us at our own game. Let's get into a little bit of social media here. So I'll give an update first off from the Holderness family continues their podcast. So the Holderness family has been, if you didn't check out our Tar Pit podcast last week, they do weekly vlogs where essentially they talk through their perspective behind the race. First off, Taryn, I'll turn to you as a fellow content creator, also making his way into the YouTube sphere. Thoughts on the Holdernesses?
I mean, they seem fine. You know, when the dad got became a bit of a diva, you know, during the challenge. You know, I get it. Like, they came in like, this is our thing. We are the experts on singing. And then he screwed up and he felt insecure about it. And I was like, there it is. Uh-oh. But then immediately in the confessional, he was like, I was a diva. Oh boy. And I was like, okay, I appreciate a man that admits his faults. Like, we'll see where this goes. So I'm still curious to see, how they operate. They definitely, they have that sort of like very cheerful persona, that feels like I kind of want to like see them like, when they're not on, if that makes sense. And you know, hopefully we'll get more of that as time goes on, but they definitely interest me. They stand out, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, it's this interesting thing, Jess, again, this human psychology element, right, of like, not necessarily I want to see you broken, but, you know, you see so many different shades of people when they are up against adversity, whether it's happiness from sadness or vice versa. And considering how chipper and energetic the Holderness has present itself, something really fun about that moment that Taryn mentioned, or even last week with Penn at the roadblock, is that we see different sides of them that I would not necessarily say are bad. They're just more human.
Yeah. And I think their self-awareness is really one of the things that makes them watchable. Like, if he had just been a diva about the whole thing and not talked about it, like, the show could really have portrayed them in a terrible light. And it's probably good that they didn't. But they know how they're coming across at all times. And that certainly makes them a little bit more likable. Like, they know how this is going to play out. If they're screwing something up, they know people are going to be pointing and laughing, for instance.
So that being said, they did a whole vlog, of course, as they did last week, on this week's race, both the leg proper and the shutdown. Here's some interesting facts. So we wondered, okay, why are they just staying in Glasgow? And then I talked also about the, you know, missing task of them hitting the barrels with the hammer that we saw in the commercials. And yes, indeed, they confirmed it was from this leg. There was a portion of time where they were sent out of Glasgow to drive to this lock where they just, I think, hit a barrel with a hammer to like pop a cork out before driving back in. But evidently, there was a lot more driving than we had seen. And partially because it seems like there was a little bit of a fuddy-duddy on production's part. You know, a lot of the teams fell behind getting to, what was the name, like Oran Moor, right? The site of the roadblock. And people are wondering why. It's just in the middle of town. Apparently, the address that production gave was wrong. It led them to some sort of like bar that was outside of town. And so if you're wondering why there's all these freakouts about we missed the highway, why, where is this place? And the fact that Kim and Penn just stumbled upon it by accident is because it truly was by accident. They had been given the wrong location.
Wow.
Yeah. To be fair, Mike, I think it was not that production gave them the wrong address. It was that the first thing that came up when people searched to get directions, when they asked people to look for it, was the one that was out of town. And the lock was, I believe it was Loch Lomond, which is kind of a famous lock. If you like Scottish things, they have a song about it.
Oh, they do?
Oh, yeah.
Why didn't the kids perform that one? Instead of
I don't know.
Cruisers?
I think everybody everybody's nether regions are completely clothed in that song, and it's less interesting.
I guess so. Yeah, you gotta. Even though the kids are performing it, you gotta sex sells in a way, and so if you gotta find out where Donald's trousers are, that's what hooks them.
I know we're gonna get added about this, Mike, because. You know, who doesn't love to talk about not wearing pants? But the whole point of the song is not you're walking around Donald ducking it. It's that you're wearing a kilt and not pants. And it's very weird to the cosmopolitan people. So exactly. I just want it to go on record that we know that.
So here's something really interesting. And maybe this should now be part of like every Amazing Race team's preparations from here on out. So Kim talked about how she took an orienteering / map reading class pre-race. And she talked about like a lot of really interesting techniques that they use, particularly this idea of what was it like reassurance points, right? Where you sort of set up landmarks on the way from point A to point B of, okay, we're going the right way, right? If we're using the equivalent of stopping and asking someone for directions, if they say, okay, take a right at the McDonald's, you know, take a left at that highway sign, you check in with those locations on the way to make sure you're going the right direction. And they also talked about this idea of a backstop, which is essentially if you've hit the blue bar and you've gone too far. So every route you choose, you pick those points so that you never necessarily overshoot your spot. But yeah, Taryn, this really surprised me, just like not only how much preparation they did, but seemingly how much preparation the other teams did not when it came to this.
Yeah, you know, it's always wild to me when people go on shows and they don't prepare a ton. You know, you talk about the basic things like learning how to make, you know, fire on Survivor or mm-hmm. learning to drive stick for the Amazing Race. But there's all kinds of other stuff that like people just like, yeah, I'll just go, I'll wing it. I'll just, you know, I'll go by the seat of my trousers. And, you know, I just don't get that. I'm somebody that loves to prepare for things. And I would absolutely, you know, I would be doing everything that I would, you know, every possible conceivable percentage, fraction of a percentage of an advantage that I could get from, for preparing for something, I would do it. I mean, it's $1 million. I mean, put some work in.
So that being said, Jess, in the break, considering how much was up in the air, how many teams did you think tried to really, you know, hone in on those skills like that and stick shift driving?
I mean, I would certainly be stick shift driving if I had that gift. But if Kim and Penn are smart, they did not mention the orienteering class to anybody because it seemed like that was a really big leg up. I think I would have been. I would have come back with a big list of things that I would want to learn, and any of them that is plausible to learn during the blip, I would be practicing them. But there's also a lot of stuff that if you didn't learn it beforehand, you're going to be kind of screwed in the world of lockdowns.
Yeah, that's true as well. You can't really like do geocaching, you know, I think like that idea sort of.
Well, it's outdoors.
Yeah, I guess that is outdoors, but, you know, or doing like escape room puzzles, right? Like that's necessarily associated with the Amazing Race, but still something that did not necessarily thrive during the time of COVID.
Yeah. Or something that I remember very vividly. Friend of the podcast, Sarah Leshner, who ran season 13 with her then boyfriend, she said that they went on a trip to like a foreign country, a city they'd never been to, and they purposely got themselves lost and then tried to find their way back to their hotel. Just to make sure that they could do it under pressure.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, just having experience in situations like that is huge because you're not going to be as frantic about like, well, this has never happened to me before. I don't know. Like, you've been there before, you've done it, but that's why, you know, having run the race, even just a few legs can be an advantage, right? Because you have that experience, especially, you know, being able to sort of like, get away from it and contemplate it. Think about what you could have done, what you should have done, what you did wrong, all kinds of stuff. So, all especially when you're trapped inside for, you know, however many months they were, like, you got plenty of time to think about how to be better.
So we talk a little bit about the way that the leg ends. And it's interesting, you know, Kim and Penn throughout their vlogs had been talking about how they had really been paying attention to like the onspread of COVID. Apparently, they had a friend who was like an infectious disease expert who flat out told them before they went out, oh, you're not finishing. Oh, no way. It's closing down. Like, you're not going to be able to finish. They knew what was happening. And so they talk about, like, obviously, a lot of their anxiety and shock upon everything happening. Apparently, just for safety, it seems like they did hang out in Scotland like a few extra days. They weren't immediately sent home just because they had to make all these arrangements to send a crew of thousands back to it. So they were able to bond with the cast in that way. And they did bring up something interesting, that when they initially got the call to come back to the race, they said no, because they thought it was way too dangerous. But the way they put it, when Bertram, the showrunner, told them about all the protocols he had put in play, he said, well, that is actually safer than just hanging out in the U.S., which feels very relatable, I think, for people that are going on reality shows in 2021 and 2022.
Very fair.
Yeah. I mean, I was very jealous of the people that got to go in the Big Brother house last year, because it was like, oh, wow, you get to be in quarantine for 2 weeks and then you're only around these same people and people do all your shopping and supplying for you. That's as safe as you're ever going to get.
Yeah, and you get to like interact with people and like do things.
You can hug complete strangers because you know they're isolating, same as you. So, like, I mean, that's always comes around in Big Brother, where by the end you're like, stop, we need to stop hugging each other. Like, I get it. I understand now. So, yeah, I highly encourage you to check out the Holderness Family vlogs if you haven't yet. I believe they're in podcast form. Jess, any other social media to-dos for this week?
I had one thing that I thought was really funny. Like, I've been able to, especially now that switch to 9 p.m., I think I'm the only person who is happy about this. But the switch to 9 p.m. means I can watch the show in real time and I can live tweet the show. And so I wanted to highlight a reply to a tweet that I got from a friend of the podcast and two-time racer, Corey Cool, who says he was mortified thinking about the time he made backup dancers do a routine 100 times. But imagine it being children.
It's really unfortunate.
I noticed that they swapped the children out at some point.
Yeah, at least they had another Timmy, but it was going to be... I would feel really bad about that, for sure.
The children, by the end, even the swapped out children, looked like they were so over it. And when they finally finished, like, you could see one of them, like, put his hand on the other one's shoulders. It's going to be okay.
Oh, you got it. Oh, it's fine. You made it through. That's the thing. I think it's one of these things where when you pretend to be one of these like extras or one of the men in like holding the phone in the phone booths, right, in the first leg, you're like, oh, this is great. I get TV time. I get to run into like quirky reality TV contestants. And then I think the amount of time just doesn't factor into that decision. And that by the time you finish, whether it's one of these tasks or whether you're just waiting around all day for these sweaty people to run up to you, you're like, oh, this was a bad idea. What am I doing?
Well, imagine being somebody that's doing that, waiting for people to go, oh, they're going to show up to my business. This is going to be so fun. I'm going to be on TV. And then nobody does it. Everybody does the other one.
Yeah. That's you're very true as well.
Never on TV. You just never show up.
Yeah, or something, or like if you're advertising a business and people come in and like just massively screw it up or like complain about, you know, your very own craft that you're doing. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe people do this. All right, let's get into...
We know that Amazing Race contestants, not the most culturally sensitive.
Absolutely not, especially back in those salad days, as it were. Right, well, let's get into some secret scenes here. I only have a couple, but these are fun to shed some light on the teams. I'll play this first one. So this is from Raquel and Kayla, the flight attendants. Now, a lot of these secret scenes are just Matt chat. So it's Phil. I'm happy we had a greeter this time because it allows Phil to make incredibly awkward conversation about, like, look at this man. He's a very strong man. He likes to lift boulders. He's incredibly strong. He does have a couple people do it, but Raquel has some very appropriate words to describe both the pit stop greeter and the country in which they just raced.
This is a tough as nails country. I mean, from the bagpipes to the
everything was so
to
hard.
The whiskey today.
To the cast. Temperature, the rain.
I mean, you guys are strong as nails, and I'm like, I gotta set my game up.
All right. So, do we think she meant this? Do we think she meant this?
Well, this was before invoking the phrase "tough as nails" was guaranteed to get you airtime on Phil Kogan's show. Because nobody knew this was a thing at that point.
I guess that is true. Yeah, I'm trying to think. So tough as nails, aired, I want to say in the summer of 2020,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, summer of 2020.
Yeah, so that phrase, you're totally right. She had maybe she predicted it. Do you think Phil Kogan was like, damn, that's a good phrase. That's a good phrase.
Well, it's a good thing you didn't go with strong as nails.
Yeah, I was going to say, as strong as nails, not as good. Not into it.
No, SAN is not necessarily as good of an acronym as TAN. So, I mean, maybe Raquel should get IP credit, though. Like, she is the Justin Timberlake of this, right? Saying, like, just call it tough as nails. You know, drop the. This is the title that you should go with. Just embody yourself with the spirit of Scotland if you want to be tough as nails.
I mean, we'll never know how long Phil has had the name Tough as Nails, how long he's been sitting on it, although he might just up and tell us one of these days. He'll have a whole story behind it.
It's very interesting. Taryn, have you ventured into Tough as Nails? Like you said, you felt almost beholden to watch Amazing Race back in the day due to your loyalty to the CBS reality franchise, but have you delved into those waters yet?
I have not. You know, nowadays there's so much reality TV out there that it's I don't even know the concept of it. I just, like, honestly, it's the name kind of turns me away. It's because my idea of it is that this is about, like, working class people doing working class things, and I think it's actually a competition, but that was not my initial impression of it. And I like competitions a lot more than I like, you know, whatever else.
No.
Reality shows are about, so I kind of stayed away.
Oh yeah, so it is definitely not a Dirty Jobs type of thing. There is, I mean,
that's,
you're not
exactly
too,
what I thought it was.
Yeah, so it's not too far away from what you're saying, even though there is a team called Dirty Hands on the show, but it is very much blue collar people doing blue collar things, but the blue collar things are a competition. It's like, okay, the first team to put up this house wins the challenge, or the first person to electrically wire to this light bulb wins the challenge. So you're not too far away, just add a competitive element to it.
It sounds a lot more fun.
The only reason all of us checked it out was because there was nothing else on. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's right there in our theme song for our recap podcast. But I'm so glad we did, because look where it got us and look how much fun we've had with it. I would say the show itself is entertaining. But what I would do, Taryn, go back to season one and watch a couple of the episodes and then listen to Phil Kogan as the fourth chair on our recap podcasts. And I think that makes the show about 500 to 1,000 times funner than it is just to watch it by itself.
Yeah, I would say it's instrumental, not to, like, pat ourselves on the back, but I do think it's very rare, even in this day and age, to, like, get the ear of someone making a show, especially in its first few seasons. And genuinely hearing from Phil about the planning stages and what he changed along the way was genuinely intriguing. So I recommend you very much check that out. You think, Jess, we're going to get any, like, Highland Games-esque challenges in light of the strong man making his way back to the screen?
I think it was probably planned for the next leg, but since they're not going back to Scotland, and who can blame them? You know, thank you, Boris Johnson. I hope there's some Highland Games style stuff in the future.
Yeah, because I think that was, like, a staple of a lot of their Scottish stuff, right? Because, like, the infamous switchback that they did was, I think it was in the Netherlands, but I seem to recall, like, a lot of stuff done in bogs and everything in Edinburgh.
Yeah, I think they should make them caber toss at some point.
Oh, yeah. I believe they actually did that in season three, I want to say, that, like, one of the detours was doing Highland Games stuff.
I think you're right. Drop the three, keep the three.
Actually, very true. Again, you brought the pants stuff last time, so come on, Flo and that guy, come on back. Those are the familiar faces.
Yeah, we talked about bald snarking too.
Yeah, it's just, that's the term that Television Without Pity used when you switch detours back and forth multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably get Ken to come back and explain it to us himself.
All right, well, let's move on here. I only have one more secret scene, but it's about a team, Ryan and Dusty, who I think, with Anthony and Spencer gone, I think now Ryan and Dusty will be able to thrive a bit more. It's a bit like getting rid of the troublemakers, like, partner in crime, almost, that they were so bro-y, they were kind of feeding into each other, those four guys. And now that Anthony and Spencer are gone, hopefully these guys will be able to shine a bit more and blend in a bit less. But if you recall, they started the leg by getting on this 7-hour train ride, sleeping in cramped quarters. Happened to remind Ryan, you know, of his time in a different place that has cramped bunk beds. And Ryan is going to recount on the number of bunkmates he had while in the clink and what number Dusty is in comparison to all that.
I counted out once. I think it was 22 cellies over the course of 10 years.
Damn.
All from one day, which is unfortunate because the time I had a cellie for one day, it was actually a really good friend. And we were both like, we should keep the situation, but we were already getting moved. And then I had one for like 4 years. So in varying times in between.
It's crazy.
In the hole, man, they just, well, crazy dudes come and go.
Hopefully you don't turn and burn me out of here. Maybe we can stake this out for a day.
You're my cellie number 23.
That's right. MJ, baby. That's wet jumpers.
From my experience, 23 is not a good number.
Numbers are bad, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. But I just find that interesting that we talked about this with Anthony and Spencer, right? How Spencer made the dark joke of like, it's not the worst train ride we've been on. But Taryn, Ryan's so cavalier of like, yeah, you know, when I was in jail for 10 years, I had about 20, 22 roommates.
I mean, it's part of his history, right? Like, it's just, it's something that he deals with every single day, as part of his history. And that's the sort of thing I would love to see on the show itself. Like, we have this incredible story. When they introduced the story of this guy who was in jail for that or prison for that long, I was astounded. I was like, this is an incredible story. And I'm so interested to hear from this person and on the race. Like, this is what The Amazing Race does for me, at least a lot of the time. He's just like an average bro. Like, there's nothing that distinguishes this guy from any other just average contestant on the show. But if we got actual, because I'm sure that he's not, right? Like, we're getting stories like this where like he's on a train and it reminds him of, oh, when I was in prison for 10 years, like, that's fascinating. I would love to see more of that. And even like the, you know, the train, like, oh, we get one joke about being on a train, but you know, if I wasn't paying attention, I there was a second where I was like, wait, why is that? Oh, right. You're that guy. You know, like, I want to see more of their personalities beyond just how they're tackling the tasks at times. And this is good stuff.
It should be noted, Jess, so I believe in the interim period during the blip, I believe Ryan won his you know, wrongful arrest case. He won a lawsuit and got a very handy payout. Do you think we're going to get any information about that during the season?
They may bring it up, but I think he's probably not going to want people to know about that because it's more money than you typically win on The Amazing Race.
I mean, very much so. Yeah, I would say it's equivalent to, I think, about a third of the run of The Amazing Race was the equivalent of the money that he won from that lawsuit. But I just thought it was interesting when it comes to like how much people's lives have changed during the pandemic. Ryan's did, but in a very different way than everybody else.
Yeah, well, it's good that they didn't all, like, I don't know, maybe it would have even the playing field if they all won huge lawsuits.
What lawsuit did you win during your 19 months away?
Amazing Race lawsuit edition.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to become an influencer and he's going to be like, I won a lawsuit that got me this much money and you can too.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to become like the Logan Paul of like a wrongful arrest of like, here's how you can do it. Here's the hacks.
You can do a collab with Celino and Barnes.
When they question you, act really suspicious, so they put you in jail, and it's wrong, and then you're going to get lots of money. I'm telling
exactly.
You.
So dark.
Yeah, but listen. You make light of the situation. All right. So to finish things out here, we got to turn to our fun and games corner here. Jess, I know you've got something prepared. It's very mysterious. I have no idea what we are in store for here.
Yeah. Well, this is super mysterious. Yes. I'm very excited about this. Any chance to hearken back to my Scottish roots, as it were. And as I told Mike when I was sending him the files for this game, Taryn, I don't know where you're at with music. So you guys can certainly choose to play collaboratively or you can play against each other. It's really up to you. But I will tell you what the game is and then you can decide. So because they spent a great deal of time at a roadblock this week assembling bagpipes, I have collected audio clips of various popular songs being played on the bagpipes.
Oh, my God.
Your task will be to listen to these clips and tell me what song is being covered.
Where's the sourcing behind this? Do you have a bagpiper in your life?
I mean, honestly, I wish that I assumed that there would be hundreds of covers of popular songs to choose from. And sadly, Bagpipes YouTube is a little bit sparser than I would have liked, but I did pick songs that I think will be pretty identifiable. And I will definitely give shout outs to the channels that I excerpted from, because they definitely, if it's something that entertains you as much as it entertains me, you definitely need to go do a deep dive, because it's very, very fun.
I think probably collaborative is
that was what I thought.
You and I will work together like pipes sticking out of the bag. We'll try to create hot air together.
I think a win for me will be, I recognize that.
I tried to get songs that are very recognizable, even to someone who spends their time on other pursuits as you do.
Okay.
All right. Now I'm very intrigued to see, like, you know, how much trap house music is being played on bagpipes. Like, what's the,
I did not choose any trap house music.
I'd be better at any obscure music. The more popular it is, the worse I'm going to get.
Well, all right. With that in mind, Mike, do you want to fire up clip one?
Oh boy, here we go. Okay. Oh God.
Darren, do you know what that is?
I mean, I know the song. I don't know what it's called or anything.
It is, of course. Listen, the Gleek in me cannot bring up Don't Stop Believing by Journey. The thing about bagpipes with me is that there's never not a held note. Like, they never take a moment to breathe. I guess that's the onus of the instrument in and of itself, but it's just so awkward to have these awkwardly held notes without any pause.
Have that drone, and they all start with that drone, which I kind of enjoy it. But anyway, I want to give a shout out here. The band that performed this is called the Red Hot Chili Pipers. And they have several great songs out there on YouTube that I highly recommend.
Wow. All right.
Here comes clip two, Mike.
Oh my God. Karen, do you remember?
Call me maybe.
Yeah, yes. They go to Canada connections.
Yes. Great job, Karen. I want to plug, there's a guy whose his YouTube name is EAMODEC. I think that's Emodec. And he has a lot of these covers and really great sense of humor around this. Like, the stills that he puts up to advertise like what the video is, they are hilarious. So call me maybe. So next up, Mike.
Wow. This is a whole troupe behind it. This is a group effort.
Yeah. Well, this is the Claymore Pipes and Drums, and they were actually a band I had heard of before I went on this rabbit hole, because they are one of the premier Scottish music acts out there.
Interesting.
So, yes. What is
this?
I do know this one. This In the Jungle.
Yes.
Mighty Jungle. The Lions.
Sir William Joel being covered on bagpipe. Who would have thought?
Is that Billy Joel?
I believe he sings a version of it. I don't know if it's like his original song, but
yeah, no, it's an older song. Like, the
oh wait, no, I'm thinking of whatchamacallit.
You're thinking of River of Dreams.
I am thinking of River of Dreams. I don't know why I'm going with that nature iconography, but that's exactly what I mixed up with.
Yes. All right. Ready for number four, Mike?
Let's see what number four provides. Is that a piano in the background? I can't tell.
Yeah, a lot of times what they do, like what these guys that are not like backed by a full pipe and drum ensemble, what they'll do is they'll just get the karaoke track and they'll play to that.
Mm-hmm. Did you recognize that one, Taryn?
I recognized it, but I could not tell you what it is.
It is Bad Romance by Lady Gaga, is it not?
It is. And that's the YouTuber is called Marine Sandpiper. And he's easy to find on YouTube because if you just type in bagpipe covers, all of his channel, all of his video titles are the official bagpipe cover. And I'm like, how do you get certified in that? I'm a little bit skeptical.
I think he just has to be the first.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess so.
Or you can just call it the official. I think that's all it takes.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, it's like world's best cup of coffee. Nobody's going to check you on that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so you think Buddy the Elf's going to check out the video and be like, congratulations, you're the official bagpipe cover of Lady Gaga, Lady Bag Bag.
Yep, Lady Bag Bag. So we're going to go back to the Red Hot Chili Pipers for this next one, Mike.
This one has so many like same notes in it when you're
that makes it good for bagpipes.
I guess so, because you're not really changing much behind it. Taryn, do you recognize that one?
Not at all.
That is Queen's We Will Rock You.
It is. Oh. Yeah, it is a popular song. There's several bagpipe covers of that one out there. I think because of what we just talked about, like multiple ensembles, but Red Hot Chili Pipers seem to be the most professional in their covers.
Wow, Freddie Mercury rolling over in his grave feeling like this is the one song that got covered by bagpipes the most.
It's true. There's one, I think this version of theirs is actually a medley of We Will Rock You and Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, Eye of the Tiger, because I was going to say, it's usually We Will Rock You into We Are the Champions.
Yeah, I don't think you could play We Are the Champions on the bagpipes. I'm not sure. I think it's too many jumping around things.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go into clip number 6.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I need this cover ASAP. This is my new like ringtone.
Yeah.
I know this song.
All right, what is this song, Taryn?
All Star by Smash Mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm really sad the Challenge All Stars ended this past week. Why did they not close out with the bagpipe cover of All Star? You screwed up, Buna Murray. Come on.
I don't know. I hear Smash Mouth could probably use the royalties. Anyway, credit goes to Emo Deck again for that one. And he had several really good ones.
I do feel like there is a rule, you know, I guess, is it Rule 23? Of like covers where there's always going to be a cover of All Star. Like whether it's something slowed down, whether it speeds up every time a lyric is said, whether it's something on the bagpipes, there's always a cover of All Star that exists out there. It is really
I was covering All Star in second grade. I could sing the whole thing.
See, there you go. It really is. It's like the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like for my generation, that was the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme.
Yeah. I mean, this would be if they did, you know, International Amazing Race Visits America. They'd have to take two little kids and they'd have to sing All Star by Smash Mouth.
And then actual Smash Mouth would hand them the clue because they don't have anything better to do.
Exactly. They'd perform alongside them like they did with the Seven Nation Army Band. They'd be like, all right, here you go, man. All right.
Yep. All right. Next up.
Clip number 7.
Yep.
This just sounds like a glitch in the Matrix. Like, what is that noise? There's no rhythm to it. I have a guess, but Taryn, do you have anything?
I mean, I for sure know the song. I have no idea what it's called.
Sing it to me and I can like put a name to it. Let's do some symbiosis here.
I don't know that I know the lyrics. So it's
okay. Because I thought it was with a little help from my friends, but I think you're right, but I don't know the name of it.
You guys, never been to a Red Sox game.
Oh, Sweet Caroline.
Yeah, Sweet Caroline.
That's what it is. Okay.
Yeah. And then this last one.
I've been to Red Sox games.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Former there Boston resident.
Well, I haven't like either. Draining your DNA. But this is credit goes to Jackson's Pipe Band. I think they're from Malta, which is kind of crazy, but they have a great YouTube channel as well.
Do they play while they're running up greased poles?
I don't believe that I've ever seen that happen, but I don't think you'd want to hurt your bagpipes either.
Maybe that's where the recording came from and why it sounds so odd, is because they were running up poles while they were doing it.
Could be, could be. All right, here's your final clip. And Mike, I think this one, I just thought, I think you will know it. I don't know that Taryn will, but I was so tickled by it, I had to include it.
Outside of the modem noise that played last time, this might be the worst sounding clip that we've heard of.
I love it. I love it so much.
Oh, yes. I know this one. Taryn, do you know this one?
I actually did recognize it at the end, but I have, again, no idea what it's called or anything.
This is a place they are not going in season 33, Africa by Toto.
There it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And credit goes to Emo Deck for that one as well. And if you have enjoyed these, I really invite you to check out their YouTube channels, because I had so much fun putting this together, and I hope that you guys don't hate me for making you listen to it.
No, this should have been a task on The Amazing Race.
Should have been. Well, they had that music task last season.
Yeah, right, where you had to listen to the songs. In this case, it wouldn't be songs that you previously heard. It's more so just like songs that exist in the lexicon.
Mm-hmm. It's a Western canon, guys.
Yeah, exactly. So it could have happened. I'm going to finish out here with one more brief game, since we have a smidge of time. And let's say, on the Scottish note, as it were, this comes from the great Sarah Carradine, who sends in a lot of games here on the Tar Pit. We're going to play a game called Scott or Not. Now, Sarah has compiled a list of people and things, some of which are Scottish, some are not. Super simple. I'm going to go back and forth. You have to tell me whether or not this thing or person is Scottish. So, Jess, I'm going to start with you here. We'll try to do it rapid fire here. The Proclaimers, singers of I'm Going to Be 500 Miles. That is correct.
There's a great bagpipes cover of that as well.
Oh, okay. So that really is speaking to the homeland, as it were. Taryn, disposable contact lenses, Scott or not?
No.
They are, actually. They are invented by Ron Hamilton. So thank you to the Scottish for allowing you to throw away your one-a-day contact lenses. Jesh, Treasure Island, the novel.
No, that's not Scottish.
It is. Robert Louis Stevenson is Scottish.
Huh.
Taryn, Pierce Brosnan, the actor.
Oh, I think he... Or no, I don't think he's... like just English. I think he's either Irish or Scottish. I'm going to say no.
You are correct. In many counts, he is Irish, not Scottish. Yeah. Jess, Roald Dahl.
Roald Dahl. No, he's not Scottish.
Correct. He is Welsh. Taryn, The Kaleidoscope.
I'll say yes.
Yes, you are correct. Now look at all these things. I'm like, we could have had a kaleidoscope task. Could have had a disposable contact lenses task.
I got to think back. I read this book called How the Scots Invented the Modern World, and it was a long time ago. I need to read it again.
All right, Jess, maybe that applies to the culinary arts. Chicken tikka masala, Scott or not?
No.
It is.
What?
Yeah, that was a weird one, Sarah. So I guess we learned something today. Apparently chicken tikka masala is Scottish.
Well, I know it was probably like corrupted by the British. I just didn't think it made it that far north before it got corrupted.
Yeah.
It's one of those things like New York pizza.
Exactly. Taryn, something you might pair with this, box wine, Scott or not?
I'll say yeah.
It is not. It was invented by an Australian, which I think Sarah's very proud of. All right.
Yeah, Sarah would have done an Australian or not game, and they just would have all been Australian.
Yeah, exactly. To just show, again, like you said, how Australians adventured the modern world. Jess, I'm going to go back to music here for you. The band Simple Minds.
Yes.
And don't you forget about it. That is correct. Taryn, the hypodermic needle.
Yes.
That's not train spotting. I know what's up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's very true, actually. Yeah. Thanks to you and McGregor. All right, Jess, Peter Pan, Scott or not?
Yes.
that is correct. Taryn, the art, not an art, I guess, the act of fingerprinting, Scott or not?
Act of fingerprinting. Yes.
That is correct. I guess they call it Scotland Yard for a reason. I guess they invented those high-profile criminal investigatory techniques. Let's finish with a couple of food items here. Jess, scotch pie, Scott or not?
I'm going to say it's a trick question and no.
As it was a trick question, it is. All right, final one, Taryn. Now, this is 5-4. You have to get this one if you want a tie.
Oh, are we keeping score?
I was, I think.
Okay.
A scotch bonnet. Is that Scott or not?
No.
That is correct. It is a Jamaican chili pepper.
That one I knew.
And I think for this sake, much like everyone sort of ended the race in the same spot, we're going to end it here with both of you get a win here.
How many questions were there? Because literally every single one of mine was a guess except for Pierce Brosnan.
I believe there were, let's see, I want to say 12, I think, overall. So you each got one wrong, I think. So
wow.
Not bad.
Congratulations. You are masters of Scotland in so many ways. You have carried that 100-pound boulder on your backs. All right. Special shout out to Sarah Carradine, by the way, for that game. Very fun. If you have any ideas for Tar Pit games, because I have been asked a couple times actually this past week about like sending in feedback, sending in game ideas, you can always email us amazingrace@robhasawebsite.com. That links to me and Jess and Rob's email. So if you have any thoughts as to like random malarkey filled geographic things that we can do, as was very indicative over the past 10 minutes, we are more than happy to do so. So that being said, we're going to start to bid things adieu now. Phil Kogan is here. All the cameramen are lined up to give us the big announcement that we're going to go away and become better people, perhaps, when we come back. But Taryn, this was so much fun to get to see the amazing race fan in you come on out ever since those days in, 2001. You obviously have a lot going on. We were very lucky to grab you before really, a huge wave of content comes your way starting in February. If you want to catch up on what you're doing currently and what's to come in the next little while, how can people follow you?
Well, I started a YouTube channel called Taryn's Quest. I'm reviewing, sci-fi, fantasy books, TV shows, movies, whatever. If you want my thoughts on those, I'm having a lot of fun over there. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong, where I'm watching The Amazing Race live. So you can watch with me. And we all watch together. We chat about it as it happens. It's very fun. Find me on Twitter @ArmstrongTaryn. I had one question. It can be a brief question, but why don't they on The Amazing Race show especially when they're self-driving, where they are located on a map, right? When somebody is way lost, I want to know, I want to see visually that they're way out there and that's why it took them this long to get here. Even if they have to fudge it a little to be consistent with things they cut out or whatever they need to do. I would just like to visually see physically where people are.
Well, my thought on why they don't do that is that sometimes they want to make a bigger deal out of being lost than is actually happening. And this was something I spoke to the Twinnies about this way back in the day, because there was this in the penultimate episode of their first season, there was a whole thing where they were purported to be unable to drive their car and super lost and yelling at each other. And they said, I don't know if you noticed this, but they showed the same clip about three times. We were lost for 2 minutes and we got right back on there, but they needed to gin up some drama. And so that's one of the reasons. They don't want us to know how lost you really were or not. I think it's just a little bit too much of a peek under the hood. And I remember one time I feel like it would have really benefited from it, and that is season 7 when those girls got lost driving in the wrong direction for several hours.
Yeah, when they drove oh, we're in the mountains. We shouldn't be going into the mountains. We should be going down to the river.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be nice. I think we actually had it last season. I may be wrong here. I feel like when Michelle and Victoria got super lost in France, I feel like we did have briefly the Mario Kart map and their dot just sort of driving around all these places. I might be wrong, but I agree. It's used fairly sparingly. And maybe, you know, I understand from Jess's perspective, like they want to try to keep things in suspense, but sometimes it's nice to get an indicator of like how truly lost someone might be in comparison to how lost they actually are.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. I feel like, again, like you can, I don't care if they fake it a little bit, right? Like, in order to keep consistent. I also wouldn't mind seeing like, oh, this team is really stuck. They're really lost. But in reality, they're right next to the pit stop. They just don't realize it. Like, I feel like they can play that up. I just feel like, it would be fun.
Yeah, I think in certain circumstances, it's definitely could be fun, especially if multiple teams are lost and the thing is right there. I think that's really fun.
So, Taryn, I know that you have also, you know, done your own little reboot in a manner of speaking. You're in your own little Swiss palace, bringing back the Taryn Show. For people that are not in the know as to, you know, what you're doing, you want to briefly describe it and who you've been talking to the past few weeks?
Yeah, the Taryn Show is back. I made it a few years ago, talking to, you know, people from reality TV, from Big Brother, Survivor. I don't think I've done anyone from The Amazing Race. I actually had somebody from The Amazing Race reach out to me once, but then it never happened. But it's very fun. You know, I have already released some episodes. One, I talked to Tiffany from the most recent season of Big Brother, which was amazing. I recently just talked to my friend Brendan, who is an actor who has worked with like Nicolas Cage, and he was on the OA and other movies and things. And he talked about like how he got into acting and everything, which was very fun. You know, I've got more, lots more to come. I've got a bunch of them recorded, so they're very fun. It's an opportunity for you to be able to sort of get to know these people outside of the context of their show or profession or you know, whatever it is that they're creating for you. And just like just have a conversation. It's a good time, and you should check it out. The Taryn Show.
Yeah. And that brings things back full circle to like what you want out of The Amazing Race, right? Is like to see the person rather than the character. And I think that that's the intention of the show. And I think it carries through well.
Thank you.
And then of course, if Celebrity Big Brother is coming, we're all going to be covering that, you know, once the information comes out. So suffice it to say, if you're a fan of CBS reality, this is just the beginning of what you're going to see of Taryn. Jess and I have already given our plugs during the recap podcast. Of course, if for some reason you're checking this out of order, check out the recap podcast where the two of us and Rob talk through the leg. Jess, was there anything else you wanted to add before we fully close out week two of The Amazing Race 33?
I mean, just add our social handles because we love to hear from you there. Mike's at Mike Bloom Type. I'm at Haymaker Hattie. I'm very much only doing this right now, and that's more than enough for me.
Yeah, so let us know your thoughts on The Amazing Race and the podcast proper. It's really nice to engage in a lot of discourse with people about their thoughts on the season, especially newbies. It does feel like every season we have more and more people sort of hopping on board. Maybe it's due to the reality TV connections. Maybe it's there's nothing else on. And so it's really nice to like do The Amazing Race 101 and talk about these sort of things. And we'll continue to do those throughout the season, including the tar pits. These have been really fun to do and bring back. And it's been very fun to talk with Taryn today about everything from leg three. So that being said, me, Jess, and Rob will be back next Thursday talking about leg four, the first leg of Amazing Race 33.2 as we are in Switzerland. We finally get to see what this new version of The Amazing Race looks like. I'm very intrigued by it because there are several questions that need to be answered, and we shall see if that is the case. Otherwise, check out all the other stuff going on Rob Has a Podcast. Rob has finally been able to begin his Survivor 41 deep dives, and they have been voluminous in nature. He already has two out, I believe, with many more to come, as well as coverage of all the other stuff on reality TV wrap-ups. That being said, thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next week covering leg four, week three of The Amazing Race 33, and hopefully a tar pit to go alongside it. We'll give details about that TBD if we get a guest for during that recap podcast. You know what? To play us out, I think let's go to my personal favorite clip. Let's go to the sweet dulcet tones of the bagpipes to see us off. Thank you all so much.